We're going to have a bit of a different kind of presentation today. We're not going to do the normal data dump. This is what's happening. And what we really want to do is we want to encourage everyone to think and to kind of wonder, where are we going? I mean, look at this. You know, what is this? The fact that you ask, what is this? That's the point, because you're thinking. You're not automatically absorbing information. You're not automatically accepting what people say to you, because I guess this says a lot of different things. I mean, Roy explained to me a few minutes ago, that's Roy Williams, the wizard who's with us today. You have a lot of fun with him, let me tell you. It depends kind of what angle you look at it, because this cubism is about looking at things from different angles. You know it's not right. But some part of your brain says, well, that is right. Parts of that are really correct. And so you're intrigued, you're questioning, you're involved, you're interacting with it. And so today what we want to do is we want to do a conference that relates to interacting with what's going on today, not just being a sponge in the audience. Now, as I start this thing, I'd like to, let me see, get a fine clicker here. I guess the green one means we're going to go forward. Ooh, those are kind of strange pictures, okay. I'd like to take a moment and sort of thank our sponsors. And I'm going to talk more about them later, but it's Bank Leumi, it's International Gem Tower. And everything that's happening here today, all the payments and everything are going direct to this charity. And so the sponsors are really giving money to charity here. I'll talk about it as well. And so everything, not just the profits, but all the revenue. So what you guys are doing, when you paid for this thing, it's a very good thing that you're doing. I'd also like to thank Sherry, who's out here. I'd like to thank Edward and Jeff, and I want to thank Ariel, who's worked very, very hard to put all this together and do all these things, as well as the other staff people who I'm not mentioning who are doing such a great job. So what are we doing here today? What's it all about? Well, it's about strategic thinking. And I went to take a few minutes to think, well, what do you mean? You know, first of all, when you look at that picture over there, you want to see what you want to see. Some of you may have different perspectives on life, but you want to see what you want to see. And how often are we able to do that? Think about, you know, the market did this, the diamond prices did that, the jewelers, the customer driven. Well, I don't want to say it exactly this way, but I guess it's to hell with the customer. Your sparkle, that's diamonds aren't the things that are sparkling out there. I'm coming to the realization that the sparkle is inside of you. I don't mean to hell with the customer, that the customer isn't important, but the customer wants the real you. They want what's inside of you that's creative, that's fascinating, that's interesting, that's exciting, that's questioning, that's interactive. They want that part of you. So you, when you look at this world around you, you're really going to have to see what you want to see. And you can't blame it on someone else. Tremendous opportunities exist, unbelievable opportunities. But you've got to see what you want to see, and you've got to do what you want to do. And if you're not doing what you want to do because the economy has grabbed you and forced you and pushed you into this active environment where you have to respond, I have to do this. I have to buy rough. I have to inventory this piece. I have to do this marketing. This have to. It's all evil. Because you're losing track of your center of what you are all about when it comes to expressing your added value or what's going on. I say, look at yourself. I mean, oh, go out of the box, get out of the box, out of the box. You know something? If you're out of the box, where are you? You're looking out of the box, but you're still in the box. All you're doing is looking out. Oh, look what's over there, look what's over there. I'm telling you, don't look out of the box, get out of the box. And when you're out of the box, don't look at someone else. Look at yourself. How are you performing out of the box? How do you feel out of your comfort zone? We're talking about massive change, generational shifts. Not only are we talking about generational shifts in the United States, how about the greatest, what do you guys think is the most important thing generationally impacting the diamond industry? Somebody tell me. What a quiet bunch. Yo. Rappaport's just a little fly on the wall. Maybe we're a surfer. But I'm getting too old to make waves. At least I think so. But we used to make more waves, ride the waves. But no, what is the biggest thing? Generational shift, other than the fact that the baby boomers are all going to die pretty soon. Not pretty soon. I'm one of them. But they're going. And you know when they go, you know what happens. A diamond is forever. They're gone. But nobody's throwing that diamond away. We'll talk about that too. But the point is, what is the most important generational shift taking place? It's in India. Average age of the population is 25. And they're the consumers, man. That's the new action. India and China, and within this decade, are going to buy more diamonds and jewelry than the United States of America. So stop for a second and look at that change, man. Where's it coming? So you got to look yourself outside the box. You got to be thinking, hold it a minute here. What's going to and that means you can't be so comfortable. I don't think people can afford to be comfortable anymore. We're not comfortable at Rappaport, 35 years in the business, greatest, you know, price sheet business, but we're not comfortable. Got competitors, we got changing markets, we got all kinds of miserably exciting things happening. Miserably exciting. How do you like that? So one of the main lessons today in the strategic thinking and the speakers that you're going to hear is going to be all about me encouraging you to step out of the box. You're completely, forget about it. God did not put your eyes in the back of your head. Step out of it. And then look at yourself. Don't look at everyone else. Where are you? What are you doing with yourself in the new reality? Now, there's a fundamental crisis or conflict or what's the word? Paradigm. It's like two things in conflicting each other. Paradox between the external world and the internal world. You want to do this, but the stock market drops, or the stock market goes up, or rife prices change, or the polish markets change, or consumers want something different. So you've already figured out the first stage. I know where I am. Now, all of a sudden, you've got to deal with this external world. So I think one of the most important things that you have to relate to is what is the gestalt? What is the whole view? What is your worldview? What is your perspective of that painting? What is your angle of looking at it? And how do you fit into this world around you? Because you can't do what you want to do without interacting with the world around you who gives you limitations. So this tension about I want to do this, but I can't. My boss won't let me. There's no budget or whatever the heck the story is. Now, that gestalt, if you understand it, is really cool. What do I mean? Let's say you want to play tennis. And you want to play tennis without a court, lines. You know, there's a court tennis, but there's no lines. Now, the tennis shots go all over the place. And it's really pretty lousy game. But when you put those lines on the tennis court, you get that guy hitting the ball right in the corner. What a perfect shot. His game, her game, is so much better because of those lines. So when we encounter constraints called reality or external reality, you know, our first constraint is our own self. If we can't imagine putting a man on the moon, then we never would have done it. John F. Kennedy said, I'm going to put a man on the moon. He dreamt it. He thought it. He could do it. So the first thing, like I said, is you yourself becoming your own boss and dreaming and doing things. But then when you do that, you right away run into reality. So your perception of reality, really important. Yeah, what's your perspective? What's your angle looking at it? Let me give you an example. I'll take our example. Rappaport Diamond Corporation, 35 years around, brokers selling diamonds, doing a new business, nice bunch of people. I'm living in Israel, they're doing business, and the world's changing. So first this, they write me, Rapnet is killing our business, and I hate it, and there's computers, and the buyers are dealing with the sellers, no more brokerage business. Okay, so I said, but why? So kill that business with a new business. This doesn't bother me at all. But then the world changed around it, the recession. What are we going to do? How are you going to sell diamonds to Americans? They don't have money. They don't have demand. Sales are down 30-40% at retail. So I'm sitting here going, you know, it's not my fault, but the reality around me changed. The gestalt changed. So how can I see things differently in that world? So then I said, well, if all these baby boomers are going bye-bye, somebody's got to buy their diamonds, recycle the diamonds, and then start a business where you're not buying from retail. You're not selling them. You're buying from the market. Become the biggest recycler of diamonds in the United States, which is actually what we're doing. But the point was, it was the same market. I'm thinking how to make money moving diamonds from point A to point B, and my perspective, my view of that image just changed because the reality changed. But what saved me was this perspective and being able to be myself, have my goals, look at the world around me, and then find the hole, find the way to go into that. And that's a major important lesson of survival in an economy, in a world, in whatever the hell is changing around you. And by the way, it's also your life. I'm getting older. I'm 58. I'm going to be 59. I think differently. I don't want to be a workaholic so much anymore. Not at all. I'd rather just stay home and watch West Wing or something. Okay? Yeah, I'm that old. But the point is, you change physically yourself. Your perspectives change. Being able to look at the gestalt and say, this is my opportunity, this is my way, this is how I'm going to change publishing businesses because it's electronic and all those things, that is the key to really becoming better as your own tennis player. But you'll improve yourself by having to rub against the environment around you. And that causes you to have to change. I know what I want. The world is there. I figured out who I am. I've got my identity down. I've got my direction. I've got my brand. I've got my trip. Now, the world I bumped into over here, I banged into it. It's pushing me around. And now I've got to change. Compromise. Move to the middle. And that's the thing of like, what's up? What's up? What's up? I think, what's up? What's up, man? What's up? Okay. But why do people say, what's up? Because that's what's interesting. We were out with Roy last night and Carol, and we're talking, and like, you know, do you guys realize that right now, as you're sitting in this room, there are approximately 10 million nerve endings in the bottom of your feet sending messages to your brain? You're getting so overloaded that it's like a fire hose into a teacup, says Roy. But you're cutting them all out because you don't really care about things that don't change. You don't care. So there's a nerve there, but it's not nice. Stick a pin in it. Yeah, okay, change, boom, wake up. But essentially, Boca region of the brain filters out everything that is boring, everything that is the same, and we tend to live on the margin, on the edge, on what's different. That's why the newspaper is interesting in the morning, or the news reports, or whatever. We're curious. We want to be aware of the change, the margin, the difference. So what's up is the thing that people want. They want what's up. Some people might think, oh, it's a new product. Some people might mean that's the way you get people's attention. But it's the change in life, in motion, in moving as your identity interacts with the environment around you, that is really what is important. You don't make money when rough prices go up or diamond prices go up. Because all of us, unless you own a diamond mine, you just make money on the margin. You buy at X, you sell X plus Y. So you're basically making Y. So if the price of diamonds goes up, well, maybe you'll make a Y by 10% more. Your Y might or might not be able to change. You may lose some sales. Or the price of diamonds goes down. But it doesn't really bother you. It shouldn't bother you because you're in the added value business. And you make that was up. You make that margin. That's what you're all about. So when you understand that's where you and your customers live, then you start to think, well, change is action is good, and it's strategic positioning. Like what? Okay, so the world's changing, right? Think of it like surfing. There's surf. There's waves. You know, it's funny. Everybody freaks out when the global economy trashes in, September, October 2008. But you know, right now, we all know that it's really going to be cold this winter. We know that there's going to be a day out there when there's going to be snow, the wind's going to be blowing, we're going to have a chill factor, we'll probably be below zero, you know, a lot, right here outside this door. And we also know that about 6 months later, we're going to be outside the exact same spot, sweating buckets, because it's 120, I think it was 115 degrees in New York a couple weeks ago or something. Now, why doesn't that surprise us? It's so cold, I can't believe it's cold, because we know winter is cold, summer is hot, seasons work. Now, why would you think that the global economy is any different? Why would we expect trees to grow up to Mars? We have to recognize that change is part of life. So what does that leave us with? Anticipating change? Pretty good idea. If you really anticipate the market's going to crash and you buy yourself some puts, yeah, that's really good. You could make $1 billion. There's a couple of guys that actually did that. What was it? The Morty's book, the short, the incredible short is it. But The point is, if you simply put yourself in the right position, you don't have to make waves. You just got to ride the wave. Now, you have to learn how to surf. You can't be afraid to step up on your surfboard. You can't be fearful. But if you know how to surf, and you know how to ride, and you know how to move your body around, kind of, you know, get that thing going, because that's how you surf. You don't surf by telling your chauffeur to go right or left. You're involved. You know, it's a whole integrated trip, man. You are physically right there moving subtle movements of your body. Now, when you do that, all you need to do is strategically position. I mean, it doesn't help if you're out there, there's no waves, and you're jumping around on your board, and sometimes you have to do that for a long period of time. You know, I was talking to Stephen Lussier about social responsibility, and he says, well, you're too early. 3 years, 5 years from now, everybody's going to be demanding all kinds of things, but, you know, you're ahead of the curve. So sometimes I'm standing on that surfboard for like 3 years in the heat. Sharks are biting off parts of my surfboard, and I'm standing out there waiting for the wave. But when the wave comes, they say, how do you make so much? How do you be so successful? So my point is that what you're going to deal with change, most of it should be strategic positioning. Don't feel like you have to make your own waves. Ride them. I mean, look at the whole diamond thing. Diamonds aren't about diamonds. People don't buy diamonds to buy diamonds. We know that women and men, when they get married, the guy's going to give the girl a gift. I mean, go back 1,000 years to the Bushmen in the Kalahari Desert, and they gave their girls, I don't know, ostrich eggshell jewelry. And that wasn't because of any De Beers marketing campaign. And the people in China, you know, gave jade, and the people in India and whatever, they gave gold, and the people in Japan gave pearls. And this gifting concept is as old as man, or I should say as old as woman. But what we simply did was we put the diamond in that wave. We said the thing's going to happen, so we'll position our product to ride that wave of guy-girl gifting at the marriage point, hence diamond engagement ring, tra-la-la, some really good marketing, but essentially we did not create demand between man and woman gift. That was there. And the whole genius was to put the product into the wave, put the surfboard into the wave. Okay, we surf great, diamonds are forever, and the subconscious subliminal messages, well, that's great. But we basically didn't create demand for diamonds. We simply rode it. That's called surfing. That's called strategic position. So get yourself all excited about jumping up and down on a surfboard. But more importantly, because even if you're not the greatest surfer, if you catch a good wave, you're going to do fine. Position yourself. Think, where's the wave coming from? It's winter. You should be buying bathing suits. It's summer. You should be thinking about, boy, I better get my ski pass at a discount. Positioning, positioning, positioning is more important than anything. You can be the greatest jeweler, diamond cutter, you know, fantastic designs, you know, how wonderful. Yeah. It's all nonsense if you don't have the right store at the right place at the right time. So you've got to really position. And then this is the thing about this conference today, why I'm talking so differently, hopefully. Interactive. It's not about you. Whatever you do, 99% of the time, it's not about you. Sometimes it's not even about your customer. It could be about your gestalt. It could be about the external factors that are whacking both you and your customer the wave. Okay? It could be the weather before Christmas is miserable. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening, but it's interactive. So when you go out there and make your plan to get 16,000 HIVS2 rings, all have to be 101 and 16, that should be nice. You're an idiot. Because you're going to jerk the price up for those goods, you're going to create artificial shortages, the whole world is crazy, and you are like some kind of robotic freak marching down the jewelry industry. Okay? You're not interactive. You're not understanding what the customer wants and how they're flexible and what you can be flexible. You're not marrying the external gestalt or the external environment to your internal environment. You're saying, I'm here, I'm big, this is what I want, boom, 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 boom. And that's not going to work in the new world. We're talking about transparency last night. Hey, it's not like you're going to have transparency. You are transparent. Anybody can find out anything about you and your 16-year-old daughter. Okay? It's like you're out there. Transparency isn't like, oh, I'm going to be, you're arduous because the world with the Facebook, with the this, with the that, everybody knows everything. But so understand that we are living in a new world where change is blessed and interactive change is most important. Listen, you know, they tell me this, and unfortunately I just don't do it, but, you know, God gave us two ears and one mouth. There's probably a reason for that, and I should be the first to hear that. So the Gestalt, a little bit about diamonds. And I want to come here and talk about diamonds today because it's not so much about diamonds. That's not what's going to save you guys as America goes down the toilet. But I shouldn't say that either. But the world is changing. You know, but let's say, what's the Gestalt? First of all, globalization. It's not happening here like it was. We have a great business in America because we're actually buying all of recycling the diamonds from America and selling them to India and China. So this globalization thing is really huge. It's the new game. So why would you walk into a, you know, a dead place? You want to go where the action is. And get ready for currency warfare. And that has major impact. I've been talking about currency warfare for 4 years now. And trust me, the renminbi's coming off the dollar. And the value of money when it changes and when interest rates change, I mean, you're talking about fundamental earthquake-type shifts in everything that's happening around you. So it's not like a little thing changed. It's like the entire, it's like New York City Island started to float over to, I don't know, the Bahamas. Because it's like a major shift here. So when money changes, the value of everything changes, and diamonds don't have to, gold's not going up. Gold's not going up. The dollar's going down. Gold's a money. So freak anybody out when the yen and the changes against the dollar or the euro changes against the dollar. It should freak out our banker friends, but it doesn't really freak us out because we expect it, like summer and winter. Well, gold is a money. It's not a commodity. So, of course, it shifts. And so when we see, you know, the dollar dying, hey, that's just, and currency warfare. I mean, thank God it's currency warfare. They're not using nuclear arms yet, okay? But that's what's happening, and we knew it was going to happen, and it's just going to get more intense. And if anybody here thinks interest rates can stay close to zero, like for the next year or two, see your psychiatrist. It's not going to happen. So what are you going to do when the cost of your inventory goes to 10% or more? Because once you know, once a cat's out of the bag, man, that cat, it does all kinds of cool cat stuff. So this controlled environment that we're seeing is going to get blown. It's like that oil well in the, you know. And that's the idea that you can't control the environment. Demographics. So the globalization is a biggie. There are other things, but I don't want to talk that much. And I got great. We have the most incredible speakers today. Demographics. Baby boomers, bye-bye baby boomers. And bye-bye, I love to do business with them. Buy all their diamonds because they're going to recycle the stuff. But, you know, there's tremendous opportunities because of shifts and change. Change is opportunity like you wouldn't believe. But the demographics and the customer mindset and, you know, we take the diamond dream for granted. We really do. It's outrageous. We take the diamond dream for granted. And we have an article. I keep quoting Stephen Lussier, not because I'm the greatest fan of the Bears, because I think he really knows a lot about diamond markets and marketing and demand, although some people disagree with him. But the bottom line is, he said, I say, everybody says, stop taking the diamond dream for granted. Younger generations, man, they may not be into diamonds if we don't give them a reason to be. Don't assume that your world is going to continue. And we are not selling the diamond dream like we should. But demographics are there, and we have to relate to the new mindset. The value system, all that. And technology. I mean, those iPads are so cool. I mean, they really are. First the iPhone, then the iPad. I mean, iPad is the new 3-stone ring. It really is. Because technology is cool. It's new. It's changing. It's sexy. It's exciting. It's what we want. It's what I want. I got my iPhone. I got my iPad. I still use a PC because I don't trust those apples, but I'm having fun. I'm playing with the damn thing. I'm interacting with the technology. These are the gestalt. These are some of the major factors of gestalt, but I'm not here to tell you what to do, how to relate to each little nitty-gritty detail. I'm like getting old and want to transcend the details. What I want to do is implant in your brains that you're going to have to react to this gestalt. And these, if you can handle these three things, you're going to get very rich. There's other stuff too, but you just take care of these three in your business. You're going to be very happy. Now, you got to internalize all this. What does it mean to me? What does it mean to you? So what we need to do is we need to internalize all the things that I've been talking about. And so what have I said here? I said, first of all, be yourself. Get your identity down. Stop letting your boss or your environment or your whatever it is boss you around. Find your true center of sparkle if you want. Second of all, I said, what did I say second of all? What did I say? I said the gestalt, the environment around you. As soon as you're yourself, you're going to piss off somebody else out there. They're going to give you constraints. Deal with it, like the tennis player. What's the third thing I said? What is the third thing? Who can remember me? Right? Hmm? External, internal, that was the gestalt fighting, right? The change action, love action. Get into it, baby. Change is great. Okay? And then I said, be aware of the diamond gestalt or the industry gestalt. And the word diamond doesn't appear on there. Okay? Just understand, this is the big stuff. And then internalize all this by finding your center of strategic added value. Not real added value, strategic added value. I think Elliot Tenenbaum was talking at one of our things a bunch of years ago, and he said, they asked Wayne Gretzky, the hockey player, he says, why are you a great hockey player? So Wayne Gretzky said, he says, I don't go where the puck is, I go where the puck is going to be. And that's what I mean when I say strategic added value. Not added value today necessarily, but figuring out how are you going to add value to those new consumers and those new global markets and those new things that we're talking about. And what's the cost benefit of your existence? So, oh, I'm doing great, I'm selling a ton of stuff, you know. But it's costing you $100 to make 90. You're not sustainable. So it's not the revenue, it's the profits. It's the edge. So what's the cost benefit? And then there's this big question of to do or not to do. Sometimes you shouldn't change. I'm not here an advocate of change for the sake of change. Sometimes you are already a winner. And you just need to sink down, focus your energy, and do what you do best. Many of you are really, really, really good at what you do. And don't go running around to change because of like some chicken without a head, you know, cock-a-doodle-dooling or something. Get it deeper. You don't have to go look outside. Sometime, your blessing, your secret to success is right in front of you. And sometimes you're already a winner. So just because you think about the world changing, don't chicken out and jump away from the reality that is already a good reality for you. Maybe you need to just go a lot deeper into exactly who you are. So get your identity, relate to the environment, but internalize the message to your own world and think about what you want to do. And be comfortable enough with yourself to say, I don't have to change. I don't care if everyone in India is buying jewelry. I have my market over here. My customers love me. I'm taking care of them, and it's cool. And I can grow that way. So you don't have to do anything other than what you want to do. You don't have to look at that picture any way other than the way you want to look at the picture. And that's the greatness of Q, is it means so many different things to different people. Not only is it to grab our attention, surprising Boca, and getting us to relate to things so it's not like those impulses coming from the bottom of the soles of your feet, because this surprises you, and you interact with this. Show you a regular picture. Okay, there I saw it. Thank you. Goodbye. But this bugs me. It makes me want to interact. And it's a static thing that interacts. If it's a live woman wearing a green hat, if it's a live woman, I mean, that'd even be more interactive if you actually saw someone like this walking down the street. But you do. You do. All of your customers, all of your friends, all of your family members, they have these different dimensions. But you choose to put one of those packages in the drawer and say, that's what my customers, that's what my reality is, this is what my store is, this is what my life is. And I'm saying, hey, babe, that's reality. The simple picture isn't reality. That's reality. And so have fun with it. Enjoy it. You know, be cool with it. Now, that's also reality. Okay? And so they're actually the same thing, if you get my speech today. This is the latest Economist, I think it's last week's. And everyone's, grow, damn it, grow, you know. And why aren't we growing? And what's the dimension of that? But, you know, you got to look at this from different perspectives. And you got to understand that you can't just say, give me a simple answer to a simple solution because I come from instant America. Whatever I want is instantly given to me. I think that we avoid the complexities of life because we're afraid to think. We're afraid to experience life to its fullest. And that's why this dude Picasso was so cool. Because he went out there and he just, you know, he got up in the morning, he put his foot on the gas pedal and he kept it down there until the day he died. And he just lived. He really lived. Every aspect of the guy. He was crazy. He was fun. He was interesting. And I think that that's the message for us here. Stop looking. Let me see where that is. Yeah. Stop looking for those simple, okay, grow, damn it, grow. I planted that seed. Why isn't it growing? I told it to do. I'm this robotic. That's not a very interactive, you know, kind of a situation. And I think that what we really need to do is we really need to transcend all that stuff. Now, there's going to be a lot of great speakers today. I'm going to get out of the way here, a few minutes over. And, like, I want you to ask yourself the question. Underneath all that, we're going to have trend speakers. We're going to have people telling you about the reality of India coming up. We're going to have then some amazing, you know, amazing Carol, amazing woman. And you're going to have this, really, the wizard is going to be here today, and someone I really love. And he's one of the most brilliant people I know, and he's going to blow you away, hopefully. But think about in the back of your subconscious, you know, why do people buy diamonds? Make sure you can answer that question if you're here at the conference today. And if you're not in the diamond business, you're in the banking business, why do people use banks or borrow from banks or would play around with banks or not pay back banks? But whatever it is, think about where you are. You're not you personally, too, because the great business people of the world, they all have personalities and they all have perspectives. So think about, you know, why do people buy diamonds? That's really important. And I'm going to get that. Now, again, Adam, the idea behind diamond demand, you know, I'm looking at the world and everybody's supply. We got to get those diamonds, those rough diamonds. And it's like ridiculous. Everybody's chasing supply of diamonds. Everybody's going nuts. Big conferences. And they're killing themselves for rough diamonds and supplies. And I'm looking at this and going, come on, you guys must be nuts. We're about to go driving off of a cliff over here in some ways. Demand, it's not about supply. And you got Agav and the Surat, you got Carol. What women want today? I mean, that's a big one. What women want? Whew. If I could only figure that out, I could make my wife happy. Maybe even my daughters. And then Roy Williams, The Changing World. So that's what's coming up this morning. You've got human rights in the diamond industry, the way forward. And this is like not a guilt trip. This is not a blame, name, and shame deal. This is what the hell can we really do? And you've got Annabel Short, Human Rights. Practical perspective. You got Peter Singer, who's amazing, a real cool ethicist from Princeton University. You got Michael Conway. I mean, he's like amazing. He's the chairman of the Fair Trade USA, and he wrote this incredible book called Branded, The Certification Revolution, What It Means to Business. And he talks about the Forestry Stewardship Council. He talks about the Fisheries Act. Walmart said, I'm not going to kill any more dolphins, and the whole industry changed. Home Depot got named, shamed, blamed, and banned, and they stopped buying, you know, I don't know, from ancient forests. But these things happen, so that's fascinating, his view. And I want to talk about the sponsors for a minute. And like I said, everything here goes to charity. So I have a problem with the sponsors ethically. Does Bank Leumi have the right to take their profits and instead of giving it to the shareholders, give it to charity? Ethical questions. Can a company be ethical? So, like, you know, if, like, okay, so it's only not that much money here, but let's say the chairman of Bank Leumi's daughter plays in the teenage volleyball league of Sea Caucus, and he decides to give them $34 million. Raise a few eyebrows. It's a nonprofit 501c3. Raise some eyebrows. So what right does someone like Bank Leumi or International Gem Tower have to give money to charity and take it away from their shareholders? They really don't have a right to do that unless it affects their bottom line in a positive manner, right? So if you want to make your brand look good, you can spend more on your fair trade gold like Tiffany does or like they do with the diamonds from Australia. You could spend more because you can get more. So it's perfectly okay for a business to have expenses, including charities, if it improves their brand, their image, etc. So what's that predicated on, that extra expense? I can spend money doing good things if it pays to do good things. So when we look at the world, and I think that's really the discussion for this afternoon that I'm sort of ending with now, but if we understand this correctly, what it means is that people choose what products they buy. If society chooses to buy ethical products, to support ethical companies, then there's an incentive for those companies to do good things, and a virtuous cycle works through the system. It's not legislated. So companies can give charity, okay, if and only if that charity giving makes them better companies and improves their bottom line. So what you guys can do here as sponsors is thank these sponsors by, I don't know, you must probably have bankers. I mean, yeah. You're considering a bank? Go to Bank Leumi. Talk to them. Consider them. You're looking for a new office? Check out the International Gentile. Why? Because they're doing good things. You want them to give more money to charities and make it worth their while. Okay? And then do that everywhere. So when you see a product or a sponsor or a thing that's good, vote with your money. Vote with your attention. Vote with your opportunity. And say, hey, let me try to do something good for these people because they're doing good stuff for us. And I'd also like to say that about our speakers. You know, Roy's flown here in his dime, and Carol's taking time, and all these speakers come in here and do this stuff. We don't pay anybody. And they're also doing good stuff. So when you're hanging out here today and you're talking to people and talking to people, just feel cool, feel comfortable, but say, hey, these guys are doing good things. They're supporting good things. How can I help them? And when you help them, you create a sustainable, positive economic environment of good things. Now, I'm basically going to be closing down right now. So first of all, was this okay? Everybody comfortable here? Didn't freak anybody out? Everybody saying, didn't yell at anybody? Didn't lambast anybody? Okay. It's not me. Usually I'm just more piss and vinegar. But oh, this is good. I kind of like the new me.